This is an interview with Governor Victor Appia at his office in downtown Portland, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is 9/10/93, and this is tape 61, side 1. I was asking you about your family, Tom and Suzanne, and what their activities are, where they're at in their lives.
Tom married Pat McDonald, and they had my oldest granddaughter, Megan. She's 19 now. Lovely lady, lovely. She's really a fine woman. They were divorced, and Tom is remarried, but no other children. The thing that I admire so much about him, he was in the rug business. It wasn't real easy for him. There was still, my brothers were there, and I one of the reasons I asked my brothers to retire, I don't think uncles and fathers should be looking over any young people's shoulders. But anyway, at some point he just had it and decided he was going to go in business for himself. He's built the business that he has today really from scratch, and he's done it by working really hard. And he's scratched and scratched and scratched to get started, and today he's doing very well.
And this is in trade?
He does that. He has rugs made to his design in China. And he travels to China no less than 3 and most often 4 times a year. Just returned from Iran and China. He was invited by Iran to speak to a Oriental Rug conference there, seminar or whatever they call it, and to address them, which he did. This is the second time now he's done that. So he's succeeded, and he's done it on his own really hard work and his own brain, his own mind. Is this how what ought to happen? He's very meticulous about what he wants and how he wants it. I think that'll be the measure of his success. What he's produced stands out. He has retailers all over the United States, and even into Germany right now. And I think they buy from him because he produces a beautiful rug, well made. But that's a picture. You see the whole picture, but he deals with the colors and each, you know, what goes where. And they have what they call cartoons, which is an interesting word, but this is the actual drawing of what that pattern is going to be and what color goes in there. He's done extremely well, extremely well. He's worked very hard at it. Suzanne was married, had 2 children, Sonia and Cody. She's divorced. That was a tough time for her. You see that side of what happens with a young woman. Here she had 2 children. She was divorced. Her husband, her former husband now, I helped, but he, of course, had his own skill. He is a professor at Southern Oregon College in art. He's an artist. And genuinely, he's an artist. He has art shows, and he's in that field. But he just wasn't making enough to send her enough to take care of 2 children herself. So here she was working with young children, daycare, and of course they would get sick, and she has jobs, and she did very well at it. But she'd come over with this envelope full of paper and would have her cancel checks, and I've rebalanced her checkbook. And I don't know how I did it. I mean, it was so messed up. I mean, we're not talking about 1 month, about 3 or 4 months, maybe 5 months. Sorting through all the papers, and we helped her. We were able to do that. But she had some sense of humor. She finally gave me a little card that says, "I can't be overdrawn. I still have some checks." But she remarried a wonderful man, a wonderful man. He works, his name is Lyndon Borden, and he works for the gas company. He's what I call an outside man. He's not a corporate person. A good father. And they have one child, the two of them, and we'll deliver in Overland September 17th, 1993. I don't think the baby will come ahead of that, but it might come ahead of that. I don't think it will, but it'd be cesarean, so that's how we happen to know. That's the day. But, you know, they really have done exceedingly well. I'm very proud of them, both of them. It's been tough. It was tough for Tom, but in a different way. You know, he just had to go do it, and you look at a man a little bit differently. It was very tough for Suzanne. She got her own jobs. She always did very well at them, was always well-regarded in the jobs that she had. But still, it was tough. You know, you worry about the children, and they maybe fall and hurt themselves, or they get sick, and it wasn't easy. She had an apartment, and but anyway, that's my family, and I'm very, very proud of them. I have very, very fine grandchildren. Sonia is a very interesting young lady. She is now, she'll be 11 in November. That's Suzanne's oldest child. She's beautiful inside as well as outside. She's a very pretty girl, but she has a beautiful soul. She's a very beautiful girl inside. Cody's a nice-looking young man. Incidentally, they're both doing very well at school, as is Megan, that is Tom's daughter, extremely well in school. I don't know how far SATs go, but I got a kind of a quick from Pat McDonald to Dolores that Megan SATs were way over 1,000. I don't know what way over 1,000 means, but to me 1,000 sounds pretty good, but she's over 1,000. I don't know how far over you go, but that's Megan. And Sonia, they straight A's, and Cody's doing very, they're good young children, they're young people. So
we've talked a little bit about your nephew George
and yeah,
Opal Creek, and are you in contact with him at all?
No. We sold the mine, and George, actually George and Tom worked for a while for Persis, which was the Hawaiian group that bought the mine. But George still, I don't think he works for him any longer. I think there was some transition to eventually, hopefully, that the Nature Conservancy will take over the part of that area mine. I actually have very little contact with my nephews. See him from time to time. Every Christmas we've had a tradition going way back. My brothers and I would get together and we would rotate every third year. It would be at our house. And it's grown now. It's, gosh, I don't know, getting close to 40. When you get us and our children and their spouses and their children, keep adding up.
How are your brothers?
How old?
How are they?
Well, they're fine. They're fine.
Are they still involved in the business?
No. I really urged them to retire. Richard retired first from the retail business. Ed retired about a year later from the cleaning plant.
And your wife, Dolores?
Well, she's long-suffering would be a good word for it. I think we've touched on it. If I had some lament about all the times I wasn't there while she was really raising the children. And working, of course, in the retail business. I'd come home and we would work at nights, and we'd go over to the cleaning plant and after work, and we worked hard at building up what we have. If she had chosen a life, I don't think she would have chosen the one that she's gone through, but she's been very good about it. And something must have clicked, because next July we will have celebrated our 50th wedding anniversary. So she's been a very patient woman.
Is that what you mean by long suffering?
Yes, long suffering. I think she suffered. She suffered long too. Among the ways she suffered with, which of course I think would be mostly apparent. She loves to cook. She has a collection of cookbooks. She reads a cookbook like anyone would read a novel. She reads it. I will get her a cookbook and she'll sit down and read it. And part of her long suffering is that I'm sort of meat and potatoes, and I don't eat a lot of things that she would like to make. And so I think she would like to cook if she'd gotten a husband that was less narrow in food taste, that she probably would have been very happy about that.
You know, during one of our sessions here, you had a woman who came to visit you, and you were going to have a meeting with her later. She was the woman who had been in your house as a pregnant teenager.
Oh, yeah.
And then she ran away.
Yeah.
What was your encounter with her like after all those years?
Actually, we talked to her on the phone, and we talked to her at the house. Well, it was very pleasant. I mentioned about what happened and how we then, after she'd been gone for some time, ran into her as a Girl Scout leader. It was very satisfying to know that even in that short span of time that we had some influence in her life. And apparently it was a very positive influence for her. But you know, it was wonderful to see her again. But it's kind of strange because she was no longer that young, pretty high school student. And I'm, of course, I'm not either, but you know, that was then, and you have that picture.
Right.
That was the snapshot I carried. Right. Well, now, you know, she's, gosh, that would be, oh my goodness, Sue has to be, well, in her 60s, I suppose. Well, I'm 70, so we weren't. I'm not even sure we were 10 years older than she was at the time. Hmm. So I just ran into, I was at a meeting at the Scouters Mountain, it's a facility the Boy Scouts have. And these were four people that had, we call part of the Heritage Society. They have indicated that they will put scouting in their wills. We don't know what or how much or anything. That's not the important point. And all of a sudden, this young man, well, young, I said, this man comes up to me and he says, "You remember me? I'm Charlie Kohler." Well, he was a Boy Scout, and when I was Scoutmaster. He is retired.
How does that make you feel?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's retired. So, it was so good to see him, though.
Are there any other people that you'd like to comment on?
Well, I think I'm a very lucky man in the sense that I had made a very close friendship with two men, Jim Campbell and Tom Gauld. We made that friendship in high school. It's lasted through all these years. Actually, all three of us married women from our high school. Jim Campbell, Donna, then Shulson, now Campbell, Dolores, and I, we all lockered together at Washington High School. And I, you know, I think to myself, you know, I have friends, you have friends, but to have that kind of friendship is very rare. And to have two of them, you know, that's rarer yet. And I met a lot of people, and I have really a lot of friends, and I consider good friends, but you know, this is a relationship that's extraordinary. I would count now Donna and Jim, you know, as my two close friends. You know, it's strange, but this is husband and wife, but you know, it just worked that way. And Tom as well, of course. So I think that I need to record those two as I feel very blessed to have that kind of a friendship for so long. I was kidding Jim Campbell. I said, "I bet you're glad I'm out of office." And And why is that? I said, well, you know, nobody calls you anymore and say, call Vic and tell him to do, why is Vic doing this? And they don't call you to do that anymore.
Well, you know, I found a couple interesting comments as I kind of reflect and do reflect on this whole process. One was on fishing.
Yeah.
It was in the Oregonian, 1982. It said, those who think of Vic Atiyah as a quiet, low-key administrator should go trout fishing with him on one of the two or three excursions a year his job allows. This was on a trip to the Deschutes. I guess somebody was following you around, Deschutes Club. And you said, fishing is a lot like politics. And they also commented that you didn't hunt.
No.
What do they mean by this, if they think you're quiet and low-key, they should see you fishing?
My demeanor, I think, gives people a wrong impression. I'm not mean, and I'm not mad, but maybe a best way, and I said it earlier in one of the tapes, my staff said, Governor, you're stubborn. I persist. Fishing, when I'm fishing, I'm fishing. And I'm fishing for trout, and I'm fishing to catch trout. And I work at it. But you know, I'm not wrapped up in it. My teeth aren't grinding or anything. I mean, I'm just, you know, wherever that might be, probably over here, and what fly do I use, and, you know, I work at it that fashion. Maybe that's Bill Monroe, who's a nice guy at the Oregonian. Enjoyed being with him. But it's no different. As a governor, I knew where I wanted to go. As a candidate, I was going to win. But my demeanor people wouldn't see that. Well, I mentioned it earlier. I'm competitive, very competitive. When we were competing for companies to come into Oregon, I was intense about that. I mentioned again earlier in the tape, I recall, when RCA Sharp went to Camas. Others said, oh, well, isn't that wonderful there in the area? And I was madder than hell about it. You know, I was mad in the sense that they didn't come to Oregon. And I was fighting for Oregon, not fighting for Washington, fighting for Oregon. So I am competitive. I am, and I don't want to lose. When I say I, there was obviously, I wasn't going to, well, in a political campaign, obviously, it's me. But in terms of trying to have Oregon improve, that's not something that comes to me, just that I wanted that for Oregon, and I wasn't going to let go. So that's...
Did you ever read... The book by the Oregon author David Duncan, The River Wye. It takes place somewhere around here, up by the coast, and he talks a lot about his fly fishing religion almost.
Well, I never quite made a religion.
They weren't religious except for fly fishing.
Yeah, I know. I just said. As I look back on it and how people might see me, they see me as see any other politician. That is trades, and we've already covered all of that kind of territory, none of which I did. But the intensity of what I decide I want to do something, I will work with it, I'll deal with it, I'll listen to people. I'm trying to sort out what good ideas are going to fit, but the point is that I keep going. All during my 8 years, I was moving toward diversifying the economy. That's what I wanted to do. When I left, we did it. I took a whole lot of steps, but they were all aimed in that same direction because I knew that's where I wanted to go. And I didn't. I saw a little. Saying it happened to be in a Korean elevator. I remembered it. I may walk slowly, but I never walk backwards.
But you never walk backwards.
That's right. I may walk slowly, but I never walk backwards. I just keep moving forward. There are those that I watch the politics of it. You know, they just shoot flares in the air, and the firecrackers go off, and people get excited. But I look past that. Okay, no, but fine. I hear you. Now let's see the product. I want to see the product. I don't care about the fireworks. I don't care about the firecrackers. I want to see the product. Well, that's the way that was the challenge I put to myself. That, don't spend a lot of time and energy in this political flair. Go do it. And we talked about, should I have had blue ribbon task forces and studies and all the rest of it, and maybe politically I should, but that's not where I was coming from. You have, at best, a limited amount of time. 8 years is not, it's a long time, but not that long a time. And so if you're going to do something, go do it. Don't spend time talking about it. So in the terms of what someone would expect of a politician, I wasn't. But when you ask me the questions you do, I just knew what I wanted. It was clear to me, very clear. I knew what the results were. I could see it. I wasn't a matter of speculation. If we do this, maybe that'll happen. That's not, maybe was not what I was after.
We talked a little bit about some of the things that you do, and I was wondering whether you read anything since leaving office, or are currently reading anything that you particularly enjoy or find enlightening.
I've never been a heavy reader.
Uh-huh.
I used to read a lot, and maybe that's why I don't read much now, but it related to government reports and studies and all the rest of that. So reading for recreational purposes, I just never get into. Dolores does, my friends do, and they enjoy it. And I'll find myself every once in a while, I'll pick up a book, and I just devour it. I mean, I just, once I get into it, I go. I've read quite a few things that relate to Civil War, which is of interest to me.
Why is the Civil War of interest to you?
Oh, I don't know, it was a period of time in history that was, I think, a great, much more dramatic than most Americans even think it was. And I'm always amazed at the number of men that were killed or died during it. It was a huge number of Americans died fighting each other. Great amount of property destruction, huge amount of property destruction. But behind it all was about the Union. And there's slavery too, but actually the first thing was secession. And are we going to be a divided United States? Though it was always percolating in the background was the slavery. I do like history. I read a lot of some things that relate to that. I've read some things that relate to our Constitution as they were meeting and building the Constitution. A lot of the issues that relate to the Civil War, mainly slavery, was because the framers of the Constitution really never addressed that. They just didn't do it. They talked about it. It was a great discussion. It wasn't that they overlooked it, because they looked at it carefully. But they also carefully avoided putting it something in our Constitution. Well, we paid for it. I believe that,
It's interesting that you say that because a lot of people look at the Constitution or what the framers of the Constitution said as it's almost the Word of God and as though they were infallible. And here you're pointing out something that they consciously sidestepped.
I've said the Constitution guarantees us nothing. Doesn't guarantee us anything, except it does guarantee us the right to make it better. It does give us that guarantee. But these are words. And you breathe life into it, into the words, to say all men are created equal. Fine. That's nice. Does that guarantee that all men are created equal? No, I didn't guarantee it. You know, they said it on a piece of paper. But until we're ready to say all men are created equal, no matter what the Constitution says, this is going to happen. And so the only right that we have, and it's a guaranteed right in my mind, and the only freedom that we have is the freedom to make this country better. And we have that freedom. I suppose that's, although I didn't think of it at that time, I'm sure now articulated is maybe the reason I got involved and stayed there for 28 years, trying to make it better. Because that was my opportunity. Yeah, you know, they did a lot of good things. When you stop to think, I think about it, for example, that if anyone wanted to have a paternalistic system of government, it would be those people there. They weren't the farmers. They weren't, you know, these are wealthy people, highly educated by the standards of the day. Many slave owners, wealthy people. You'd think they want to protect that. And yet, they said, no, let's see if people can run it. Instead of us running it, let's see if people can. It's amazing it came out that way with those that were there. But that's the way it came out. It's a shame. You know, those that were there at that time had the greatest fervor. As years moved along and new generations came along, and we lost a lot of it. And yet you have to ask yourself, why do people from other parts of the world want to come here? And you have to ask yourself, why are these the people that come here and become citizens the greatest patriots? Because they know what we have and what they had. And so you'd think somebody would step back and say, hey, maybe I overlooked something here. Maybe this is a pretty good deal. But unfortunately, Americans don't quite do that. I express it in many ways. I've got it's my speech file, I call it. All kinds of things tucked away in it. But one of the speeches I remember giving about, and I told the story, and today is our 90th day in the trail, and it's been tiring, and on I go that way. We pause for a minute to bury Sarah, and her dreams, you know, are now on the ground here. Ah, but tomorrow is the 4th of July. We will break out the goodies for the children, and we will dance and we'll sing, and what a marvelous day this is. And then I do this telescoping of time. Hey, tomorrow's the 4th of July, we get a free weekend, we're going to put the kids in the camper and we're going to the lucky thing, they've got showers and TV and whatever, you know. And, you know, all of a sudden, you've lost the flavor of why is the 4th of July? It's just a vacation. That's all it is.
Do you think people need adversity to be able to appreciate things?
Well, I'm not sure I'd say need it to appreciate it. That's when that happens. That's when that understanding and patriotic fervor, that's what the fervor was in World War II. This was great pride in this country, a Desert Storm. But it just comes and goes. And I don't expect people to be in a fever pitch, you know, their entire life. That'd be an awful way to live. It's just that being damn proud of the fact that you're American, and feel just damn lucky to have been born here. And just to say that once in a while. You know, I don't have any shame at all in standing when the flag goes, take my hat off. I don't have any shame at all in the fact that that I believe in this country, and I don't mind saying it. You know, I don't know why they should be ashamed of saying it. I'm not the America love it or leave it. You know, as I told you, sure, there's some things that are not as they should be, but then my role is to help make it better. It's not a matter of love it or leave it, you know, take it like it is, warts and all. No, 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 no.